Yeah. So the idea of the talk is following up on two things that have been discussed. So one proposal by Lee Smolin that we should look into different universality classes for gravity. So the talk here will be an example of having these different universality classes realized. And the second one is the topic of transporting methods that have been developed in one field to another. So coming from the asymptotic safety community, we will carry over our tools and investigate Horava-Lifschitz gravity in the talk. So what are we going to do precisely? So first, since we already had a good introduction to Horava-Lifschitz gravity, I can be short here and I will analyze and discuss the theory from a Wilsonian viewpoint. Then I will introduce the Wetterich equation for projective Horava-Lifschitz gravity. And in the main part, I will tell you something about constructing RG flows for the theory. So there are two types of computations that we have done. So the first one is finite temperature style. And the second one is what we developed very recently. So we construct flows based on anisotropic heat kernels. So let's get started and look at quantum gravity from a Wilsonian perspective. So here's the cartoon version, how the setup looks like. So the arena where we are playing, this is called theory space. The theory space, by definition, contains all types of action functionals. So these guys depend on the fields of your theory and they are invariant under a certain set of symmetries. So these span the space. We have a vector field sitting on this space. These are the so-called beta functions. And what we want to do is we want to construct RG trajectories. So this is depicted here. And in order to get a full predictive quantum theory, these RG trajectories should have an infinite length. If we formulate them in terms of the effective average action, then we have this parameter k that parameterizes these trajectories. And for k equals to zero, we get the standard effective action. And we are also interested in this limit where k goes to infinity. And here the flow should be governed by a fixed point. So then this is the chance of extending our RG trajectories to an infinite length. Why are fixed points important in this business? So this is summarized on this slide. So by definition, a fixed point is a point where the beta functions of our theory vanish. So this has the advantage that if we have an RG trajectory, it can end on such a fixed point. So being close to the fixed point, you can spend an infinite amount of RG time. The fixed point then ensures that the dimensionless couplings of your theory remain finite, and this in turn ensures the absence of unphysical UV divergences. Given that you have such a fixed point, you can look on the flow in the vicinity of the fixed point. Here, the flow is governed by a so-called stability matrix. This is Bij. And depending on what the flow close to the fixed point looks like, we are distinguishing two classes of trajectories. So there are ones that approach the fixed point at very high energies. So these are the relevant directions, and there are RG trajectories that go off from the fixed point at very high energies, and these are the irrelevant directions. The relevant directions form something that is called a UV critical surface, and these are the trajectories which form our renormalizable theories. And in general, for the theory to be predictive, it's simplest if we require that this surface has a finite dimensionality. So the dimensionality of the surface is directly linked to the number of free parameters that we have in the theory. So this is the general construction. Let's see what fixed points have been proposed for doing quantum gravity. And at this point, I have to admit that my list is probably incomplete. So apologies for the theories that are not covered here. So the first proposal that goes back to the end of the 70s is what I would call an isotropic Gaussian fixed point. So here the idea is that you can capture gravity by the Einstein-Hilbert action, and then you want to set up perturbation theory in Newton's constant. So that's the first proposal, and we know this doesn't work because gravity set up like this is perturbatively non-randomizable. Then we can propose this alternative Gaussian fixed point. This is also isotropic. And here we change the fundamental theory from Einstein-Hilbert action to higher derivative gravity. This has the advantage that the theory is indeed asymptotically free in a coupling constant, but people also didn't follow up on this route because it suffers from ghost states. Then,
but is it asymptotically free or asymptotically safe?
This one, Gaussian fixed point means it's asymptotically free. So if it's higher derivative gravity, you set up your perturbation theory in the coupling in front of the C squared terms, and that flows to zero at very high energies. So in principle, it satisfies this requirement, but you have problems with unitarity. Then there's the proposal that has been discussed at various talks here. This is the asymptotic safety program. So here, the underlying universality class is a non-Gaussian fixed point. That means that the corresponding action functional describes an interacting field theory. And we should stress that the theory is Lorentz invariant. So in principle, this is a viable candidate for quantum theory for gravity. And we have heard a lot of this program summarizing its status. Since we are in the Horava-Lifschitz section of the conference, there's also the proposal to do a UV completion of gravity based on an anisotropic Gaussian fixed point. So here there's the proposal by Horava, who gives us the action, what the fixed point action looks like. And the idea to reconcile perturbative randomizability with gravity is to make this underlying actions Lorentz violating. So here we really have an anisotropy between space and time. And a priori, this is also a good proposal for quantum gravity. So these as a list of universality classes, then one can think about how to fit these two parts into one diagram. And here's my cartoon version of it. So this is the relation between Horava-Lifschitz gravity and asymptotic safety. So we have seen that Horava-Lifschitz gravity is formulated in ADM variables. So we have a lattice, we have a shift vector, and we have metrics on spatial slices. And the theory space contains the action functionals that are constructed from these fields. So if we talk about Horava-Lifschitz gravity, then the symmetry requirements for these action functionals are foliation-preserving diffeomorphisms. So these are the actions that span this huge space up here. And the UV fixed point of the theory is then indicated here. So this is this anisotropic Gaussian fixed point. This full space then contains a hypersurface with increased symmetry. So this is the yellow blob here. So here we have increased our symmetries from foliation preserving to diffeomorphisms. So this selects a certain subset of action functionals, and these sit on this hypersurface. And the non-Gaussian fixed point that we know from asymptotic safety is on this hypersurface.
So,
yes, sure.
You draw the anisotropic Gaussian fixed point in a different, away from the Gaussian fixed point in the isotropic case.
Yes.
So I thought Gaussian fixed point means all couplings are turned off. Shouldn't they be the same point then? Or
no.
What am I misunderstanding there?
So a Gaussian fixed point, you can construct.
So you have an anisotropic kinetic terms.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
Okay.
And the Gaussian fixed point down here is the one that you get from the Einstein-Hilbert action when you do perturbation theory in Newton's constant.
Okay. Yeah. So
that's why I placed him here on the surface.
Yeah, so you assume like a particular set equals something, and then it's not the set equals one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So these guys are definitely different.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So this is the setup. This is the arena which we want to play in. So now we have to find a tool to construct these RG trajectories depicted here. So this brings in the Wetterich equation. We have seen that this is very successful for metric gravity. And we can also construct a version for projectable Horava-Lifshitz gravity.
So projectable Horava-Lifshitz cannot approach generativity in the infrared.
Why not?
Because, I mean, for example, I mean, there are all sorts of pathology. For example, you cannot construct a static solution that forms caustics, and you cannot quantize it. And there are all sorts of problems with that sort.
So a priori, I see no reason why the RG flow of Horava-Lifshitz gravity starting here cannot approach this increased hypersurface of increased symmetry in the infrared.
Well, no, even if you take GR and just look at the version of GR with lapse being fixed to be a function of time, then it usually basically ends in caustic singularities. So it's not.
But you're talking classical solutions here.
Yeah, classical, right?
No, yeah.
But I mean, if you don't have classical solutions, you don't have quantum solutions either. So I mean, at the classical level, you cannot define the theory. At the quantum level, it's probably even worse. I don't think it's a good theory. I don't know if somebody wants to disagree with me.
Depends on what you mean by good for what, right?
Well, good for approaching general relativity, because
it could be good for holographic reasons or something.
No, I mean, I think that the program here is like...
You should distinguish two different things. One of them is mathematical self-consistency, and the other one is just the theory of our universe.
That was my point.
The second one is, of course, much more ambitious, but I think we should...
But I think here is the idea, is we're talking about a theory of our universe.
Yeah.
Isn't that the goal, to talk about a realistic theory of our universe or not? Maybe that's too ambitious. Okay, so...
Let's postpone the statement to the end of the talk, then we can discuss this. Okay, we want to have a tool for constructing RG flows. So here's the technical version. For the projectable Horava-Lifshitz, we have fundamental fields, the lapse, the shift vector, and metrics on the spatial slices. And in this case, the lapse function only depends on T. The symmetry group are foliation preserving diffeomorphisms, which are a subgroup of the full diffeomorphism group. And in general, if we write down actions on the theory space, these don't need to be Lorentz invariant. The construction of the Wetterich equation for this basically moves along the same lines as we have in metric gravity. So here you really have the same functional form. On the left-hand side, you have effective average action. On the right-hand side, there is this one loop improved trace structure. Here's the second variation. The RK is a cutoff, the regulator. And the crucial difference between this formulation for anisotropic theories is that in principle, this theory can have two correlation lengths. So one is associated with correlations in the time direction. One is related to correlations in the spatial directions. So that makes working with this equation in the anisotropic case more difficult than in the pure gravity case. So once we have this equation, let's see how we can get some physics out of it. And the first game we played is we evaluated this functional trace on product spaces. So for the metric formulation, this trace contains essentially a momentum integral over four momentum and a sum over fields. And for Horava-Lifschitz, we broke this down to foliated spacetime. So we have a compact time direction S1, and we have spatial slices. And then the trace breaks up into a sum over essentially Kaluza-Klein modes along the S1 and an integration over three momenta here on spatial slices. So this structure has the great advantage that we can get a lot of intuition from applying quantum field theory at finite temperature. So here the Kaluza-Klein modes would be called Matsubara frequencies, and there is a lot of experience in working with this flow equation at finite temperature.
What is the physical motivation of considering the theory at finite temperature?
No, it comes in. If you have this anisotropy between space and time, you get this S1 circle in the time direction for free. And but even if you don't want to make this connection, then this S1 naturally gives the structure of a quantum field theory at finite temperature.
Yeah, but I would think that as R1 plus M3 instead of S1. Why to complicate things and think about S1?
Why complicate things? Typically, if we evaluate this flow equation, we always work with compact spaces. And you can decompactify the space, so this is no technical problem. So instead of getting sums here, you will get an integral. But the structural function for the beta functions is the same. But the S1 has the advantage that you also regulate fluctuations in the time direction. And then you see by doing the flow into the infrared, you see that the circle essentially decompactifies, taking more and more fluctuations into account.
The big function comes solely from the zero mode, right?
This is an approximation, but we took all modes into account. So you really see, you can really do the resummation, and this changes the structure of the beta function. So at finite temperature, it's a well-known approximation to restrict this to the lowest Matsubara modes, but this is not what we are doing. Okay, so what are the advantages of this type of equation? So first, it applies to Horava-Lifschitz gravity. It, in structure, it's very similar to the things that we have seen in the CDT talks. So we explicitly keep the structure of a foliation. And in this formulation, we can also explicitly include a parameter that takes care of if our signature of the metric is either Euclidean or Lorentzian. So by picking this epsilon, square root of epsilon, to be plus minus one, we can switch between Lorentzian and Euclidean signatures. Now we have this equation. We want to construct explicit beta functions. And the first thing that we did in this program is we wanted to recover what we know from the Einstein-Hilbert truncation in metric gravity. So we wanted to see how close these programs are. And for that, we took the Einstein-Hilbert action. We performed an ADM decomposition. So here you see extrinsic curvatures here. And the ansatz has two running coupling constants. So this is G and lambda. The setup lives on this structure S1 times S3. And we can keep track of the signature parameter. The appearance of the circle then says that besides the regulator or beta functions depend on the size of the circle. So there's an additional dimensionless coupling constant M, which is essentially the size of this S1 times the cutoff. So essentially this M encodes the freedom of anisotropy between space and time. We constructed the beta functions. We searched for fixed points. And here is the non-Gaussian fixed point of the system depicted here. So this is dimensionless Newton's constant. This is the cosmological constant. And what we do here is we increase the value of M for Lorentzian signature, and here we increase the value of M for Euclidean signature. So the takeaway message is that the fixed point that we get in the ADM decomposed system is very similar to the one that we observe in metric gravity. And we also find that it also survives if we change the signature of our metric.
So here you just have the ordinary gravity in a certain way, but you still have foliation.
I have a foliation, but I'm still in the isotropic case. So I have no Lorentz violating terms in this ansatz.
Yeah. Well, but still you have a foliation.
Yes.
But what you are saying here, well, that was of course the original philosophy that we had in the old days about CDC, that the foliation maybe didn't play an important role as such, you know. So what you are saying here is that you get a Lorentz invariant theory, even if you have a foliation.
The foliation allows me to do a Wick rotation.
Yeah, no. But I mean, it has a full. Does it have a full symmetry of
the truncation ansatz has the full symmetry.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But I cannot say at the moment. I'm not saying anything about terms outside this truncation ansatz.
Okay.
Bear with me. I will.
Yeah, sure. But you're saying that it is a consistent trunk.
Consistent is too much. There is a G flow perpendicular to that one, and I'm fine.
I hope we have the same question and I'm still not understanding exactly what's going on. So you have the Lorentz function only as a function of time. So is this really a partially gauge fixed version of GR that you're looking at? And the gauge fixing that has been made is still kept track of? Or has that been thrown away?
The gauge fixed? No, we implemented. Yes, in principle,
then
you can look at
it as full GR, keeping track of that partial gauge fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so instead, it should be by design oblivious to the foliation at this point. This truncation doesn't know about the foliation, even though it's written in there.
Yes, I just switched my gravitational variable to lapse shift and spatial metric, and I gauge fixed essentially N and I, so temporal gauge. Good. Then we integrated the flow. And here, from the beta function, so this is the covariant formulation using metric variables. This is the flow that we obtained from the beta functions with Euclidean signature and the ADM variables. And here, this is Lorentzian signature ADM variables. And you see that the three plots really compare very well. So this gives some confidence that going from the metric formulation to ADM, we can recover these old and known results. The next question was already alluded. So what can we do in terms of anisotropy? And then we extended our ansatz and we included a running lambda k in our ansatz and computed the beta functions for that one. Also here, we have a set of fixed points. There is a line of three fixed points where Newton's constant vanishes, cosmological constant vanishes, and this small lambda is a marginal parameter. So this essentially reflects that we have a one-parameter family of kinetic terms in this action. This truncation also showed the existence of a non-Gaussian fixed point. So the properties are very similar to the one that we know from asymptotic safety. The only difference is that for the lambda, it moved away from the symmetric lambda equals to one plane, but we think that this is an artifact of using an anisotropic regulator of the theory. And I should also stress by the list of fixed points that your fixed points, the anisotropic one, cannot be probed here by this ansatz because we are missing higher derivative spatial terms. So this is the flow that we got out of it. So here, this is the non-Gaussian fixed point. This is the isotropic Gaussian fixed point. And you see our RG flows nicely cross over from this one to this one in the infrared. And we can tune our trajectories in such a way that the flow becomes very close to the Einstein-Hilbert action at low energy. So this is depicted here. The closer we tune our flow to the Gaussian fixed point, the longer we stay in a regime where lambda is very close to one. So in principle, this gives some hope that studying the RG flow of Haber-Lifshitz gravity, we can recover something that resembles GR in the infrared.
So how should I combine this with what we just saw in Dario's talk? Because in Dario's talk, we saw that it was difficult to...
Let me go to the next slide.
Yeah.
So now I want to zoom in into the anisotropic Gaussian fixed point that played the crucial role in Dario's talk. So this cannot be probed at this setting, but we can envision something to actually get our hands on this fixed point. So doing gravity in 3+1 dimensions is incredibly hard, but in order to identify the corresponding anisotropic fixed point, we can do a setup where we have the gravitational action, we have coupling constants in this action, and we couple this action to Lifshitz metafield, so this is an anisotropic scalar field, and we look at the flow of these coupling constants when we integrate out the metafield. So in this setup, we can trace the running of all 8 coupling constants that appear in the projectable version of the theory, and we can also handle the wave function renormalizations of this ansatz. The key ingredient that we have to understand here is this type of Laplace operator. So this is essentially the same as appeared in Dario's talk, except that we keep a general exponential set for this operator. We can take the flat space limit of this gravitational sector, then we get 2 propagators out of the theory. So this is the spin 2 part. So here it's the coupling constant G8 that appears up here. And we get the spin 0 part. So here you see the combination 1/3 lambda and the coupling constants G7 and G8. And the terms of the dots do not contribute to the propagators in the flat space limit. So now what can we say about the induced running of this thing? What we want to do is we want to copy the idea of asymptotic safety to look at the heat kernel expansion.
Can you go back for a second?
Since I'm at 1 minute,
okay, so then
I should go forward and not backward. Okay, we can discuss it at the end. Okay, we want to copy the idea of evaluating the traces via heat kernels. And then you bring out the guns that have been developed for the asymptotic safety program, the universal RG machine. And with that, we can really compute the anisotropic heat kernel for such type of operators for any dimension D and Z. So this is the formula here. What you see is that essentially the S dependent was shifted by the anisotropy. So instead of D, there's now D over Z, and we have all the coefficients of the expansion for the kinetic term. Why are we convinced that this works? So we checked that for Z equals to 1, we reproduce the ordinary heat kernel, and then there's one result of the anisotropic heat kernels in the literature. So this is also reproduced by our result, but we have the general expansion. So now we want to use this to compute the beta functions of our running coupling constants, matter-induced So here we have Newton's constant. Here this is the small lambda. This is G7 and G8. And the UV is to the right of the plot. Infrared is to the left. So you see that Newton's constant nicely flows to zero as we go to very high energies. The small lambda approaches the conformal point. So this very quickly moves to 1/3. And we see that G7 and G8 approach constant fixed point values in the UV. So in the setting, we have really identified the anisotropic Gaussian fixed point, which is UV attractive for all these coupling constants. So, and here are the values. So this gives confidence that the picture that we had in the beginning, that we really have two universality classes in this bigger space, which allowed for the continuum limit of gravity. So this is definitely evidence for this, that we have this UV attractive anisotropic Gaussian fixed point and the non-Gaussian fixed point up here. So this brings me to my conclusions. So first, we have seen that the Wetterich equation can be a powerful tool for studying projectable Horava-Lifshitz gravity. We have some understanding of flows on this theory space. So it contains the non-Gaussian fixed point that we know from asymptotic safety. And a Gaussian fixed point for the IR completion, we have seen that in the meta-induced gravitational RG flow, we have identified this anisotropic Gaussian fixed point where the theory is asymptotically free. And the takeaway message of this one is here. So if you take Horava-Lifshitz gravity in the large N limit, it's perturbatively randomizable at this fixed point. Thank you. Yes, this is work in progress. So with the universal RG machine, we can actually extend this computation of anisotropic heat kernels to spin fields. And then you can apply the same machinery to graviton loops and add this effect to the beta functions.
I guess I'm confused. So what are the loops that are included here?
It's the fluctuations of the scalar field. Yes, this integrating out the scalar field induces the beta functions for Newton's constant up here. So in essence, you can make the argument that if you have many scalar fields, you can always overwhelm the contribution of the gravitational degrees of freedom and get this asymptotically free phase.
You just have two scalars.
Okay, take this as n fields, saying it's a vector of real scalar fields. Okay.
So you're understanding correctly that this is a back reaction of the matter fields from gravity.
Yes.
That drives it to the calendar.
Yes. Okay. And I think this depends on that we put the coefficient here to exactly 3. So it only works in this case.
Was it not to investigate the metric properties of the space, of the sort of random space that is generated?
For this anisotropic things, I haven't thought about this, but I want to investigate for the non-Gaussian fixed point. So there, I think there's some room to make contact to things you have discussed in your review.
Okay, well, thank you, Dan. Mm-hmm.